gentlemen, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, the title will go and explain everything for you. This is a podcast about animation. You got that? Great. Beautiful. But specifically, it talks about the latest news that happened this week. For example, on this episode, I will be covering what Disney wants to do with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And then afterwards, we will be looking into the cast of the animated series of Big Hero 6. Then afterwards, we will be looking into a video essay all about the animated works of Brad Bird. And then afterwards, we will be looking into Tim Miller and what he is doing after leaving Deadpool 2. And finally, we got Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And so, for the first story that we have for you today, let me discuss a little bit about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Now, chances are, if you are listening to this, you know very well what this movie is about, and you have seen it. I mean, generation after generation, almost 80 years now, that this movie has been graced onto the public, and a lot of people would argue that this could possibly be the most important animated feature ever made. I mean, this is the first one that really got the public's eye around the world and gave the notion that maybe there is a chance that animation can be used as a medium in order to create feature films. They're not just cartoons anymore. These are characters that you can legitimately feel for, not just laugh, but, you know, fall in love with, to be feared at, to cry, and all that kind of stuff. It really was the first animated project that really experiment with giving its audience emotion. And this is one of the big reasons why the Disney company is pretty much where it is today. Snow White can arguably be as important as Mickey Mouse or Disneyland. It really was the animated film that defined an entire medium. And guess what? Disney is doing a live-action reboot of it, because of course. Now, specifically, the news that going into my source here in Variety is that Disney is thinking about making a live-action reboot based on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. It will be live-action, however, they will maintain the musical aspect of it. Now, even though nowadays they do not know who's going to be directing the feature or the actors that they are going to get for it, they have brought in some people, most of which coming from La La Land. The exception, of course, being the writer, which is Erin Cressida Wilson, who recently worked on The Girl on the Train. The rest, however, they got Mark Platt, who is the producer of La La Land and is also producing Mary Poppins Returns. But they also got Benj Pasek and Justin Paul to come in and write some new songs for the feature. Now, what is actually pretty interesting, however, is that this is not the first time that Disney announced that they want to do something in the lines of a live-action reboot with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Beforehand, they have actually announced a spin-off film, in a way, called Rose Red, which is based on one of the characters from Grimm's Fairy Tale, and they want to have a bit of a spin-off story that would be about Snow White's sister, in a sense. And you know what's honestly really surprising about this announcement of Disney making a Snow White live-action reboot? It's not just because technically they got Snow White covered with Rose Red and all that stuff, but it's also because it's been done already. Not by Disney, but some of the other companies. We all know about Snow White and the Huntsman, but there's also Mirror Mirror. So technically, That's already been covered, twice even! So why Disney would want to come in and try to put in their cards on the table when It's already been proven that it doesn't necessarily work with Mirror Mirror, but okay, I know that with Snow White and the Huntsman, that turned out to be a hit, but then, like, when that sequel came in not too long ago, that pretty much flopped immensely. Like, what was it again? Huntsman something? I don't godforsaken care. But yeah, like, you'd think, like, considering that other companies have already covered the story of Snow White, that Disney would want to put it on the wayside because they, like, it's already been covered. It's been done already. Like, we don't need another, like, live-action reboot of the story of Snow White. But no, Disney decided, you know what? Like, I guess our interpretation of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs is different enough to deserve a live-action reboot. And that's pretty much the story that we have gotten so far. And let me be honest with you guys, I, like many people, I'm up to the point that I'm starting to get a little bit tired of hearing these news pop up over and over and over, because the thing is, like, whenever Disney seems to be developing or, like, they're thinking about making a new animated, or, like, not new animated, but I mean, like, a new live-action reboot of one of their animated films, the media just jumps into it. Like, you see websites like Variety, Deadline, The Hollywood Reporter, and all those websites, they would immediately jump in and make it like a headline story, try to really make it big. And honestly, because of that, it's starting to get so tiring. Like, I'm starting to really get to the point that I am equally as tired of hearing this as much as I was tired of hearing, like, every single stupid thing that's going on with the Ghostbusters reboot back during the spring and summer, and all the stupid things I hear about Donald Trump, whatever bullcrap thing that he does to prove himself that he cannot be the president of the United States. Oh, hark! Is that the sound of keyboards typing furiously coming from triggered commenters? I just somehow find that really amusing. I don't know. It's just, it's really funny. Or, like, it's both amusing and fascinating how people can get so easily triggered that, like, just the mere seconds of mentioning politics, like, somewhere in a video or wherever it may be, because somehow they act like it's forbidden to talk about it on the internet. I don't know what it is. I just really find that amusing. Oh, it brings me such humorous joy that angry, triggered people can be ridiculously sensitive for the smallest of things. But anyways, going back into the Snow White ordeal that we have here is that, you know, the funny thing about, like, all the big news that Disney is trying to make all these live-action reboots is starting to get to the point that it really is getting ridiculous. And now I'm really starting to doubt if all the things that they have announced is legitimately gonna happen. Like, now I'm starting to be like, yeah, I don't think all of them are gonna legitimately happen. Because here's the thing. When you look back at every single announcement that Disney has made that they're going to make a live-action reboot of this, or they're going to make a live-action reboot of that, like, they have announced so many to the point that if they actually are going to do it, then that pretty much means that they're pretty much covered for the rest of the 2020 decade. Because when you look at their schedule, Disney is pretty much planning to release only, like, one, two, maybe even three annually. They're not going to release a whole bunch at once. They're just going to spread them out just a tiny bit at a time. And, you know, looking at the entire list, you know, I highly doubt if, like, all this is legitimately going to happen. Like, I'm going into my, going into Variety, they actually have this entire list of all the different movies that they want to make. And, like, I'm starting to be even doubtful. I mean, like, they want to make a Pinocchio movie. They want to make a Peter Pan movie with the director of the Pete's Dragon reboot. They want to do a King Arthur movie that might go a little bit in the lines of, like, The Sword and the Stone. They want to make Winnie the Pooh, but give it that 2010 Alice in Wonderland touch where Christopher Robin is now 18 years old and he's back in the Hundred Acre Woods and all that kind of ridiculous stuff. And, you know, I don't think it's legitimately gonna happen because it's up to the point where the idea is just in development. I don't think it's officially greenlit yet. I mean, if you're curious about the ones that might actually happen, like the ones that would have the strongest chance to actually happen, then you don't go to websites like Variety or Deadline or The Hollywood Reporter. I'm not saying they're not legitimate sites. They're really amazing, they're really amazing film journalism websites. Like what they do is absolutely professional and like they know their stuff. But what I'm saying is that sure, they're immediately reporting it, but that doesn't mean like the project is greenlit. It doesn't mean that Disney is officially doing it. If you want to know the ones that Disney might actually consider doing the most, then you don't go to those websites. Instead, you go to Disney's official websites. Like you go into the official website of the Walt Disney Company, or you even go to Oh My Disney. In fact, I've actually gathered up a little bit of a list of the animated films, or not the animated films, but like the live action reboots that Disney wants to make that have actually been announced on Oh My Disney. So the ones that I've gathered so far, these include Cruella, which is going to be a movie about Cruella de Vil from 101 Dalmatians, which is going to star Emma Stone. They got Dumbo, which will be directed by Tim Burton. And by the way, yes, I know it is the weirdest combination that you can ever think of. There is also Maleficent 2 coming in. And technically, I guess you can kind of count Mary Poppins if you would also count Pete's Dragon. There's also The Jungle Book 2 that's coming. There's also going to be a Tinkerbell movie starring Reese Witherspoon. And on top of that, there are the other ones that were recently announced, including The Lion King and Mulan. So that's about 8 projects. And like when you look into, like on top of that, I got the list here of like the live action films that are going to be released in pretty much the rest of the decade. And like, even though in 2017, we got Beauty and the Beast that's going to be coming, but also at the same time, hold on a sec. Sorry, it's just my computer giving me a little bit of a warning. I'll do that later. Anyways, going back into 2017, there is going to be Beauty and the Beast that's going to be coming in March. And then there's also going to be another one that's going to be coming out at the end of July. So that's 2 right there. The same thing can be said in 2018, where they got an unannounced one that's going to be coming out in April. And then there's going to be Mulan that will be released at the end of 2018, around in, I believe it's in the beginning of November. But then afterwards, you got 2019, which so far they only got one plan, and that's going to be right at the end. And technically, like going back to 2018, you can also put in Mary Poppins Returns, since that's going to be coming in on Christmas 2018. So you get what I mean, that they only got technically, give or take, about half of all the movies that they have announced, they want to actually put it in development. And especially when, like, I just mentioned movies like Maleficent 2 and Jungle Book 2, so imagine if any of the ones that I announced that got really, really successful. Like, imagine if Beauty and the Beast ended up being highly successful at the box office, making the same numbers as Maleficent or Cinderella or The Jungle Book. Like, who knows? Maybe Disney wants to go and make Beauty and the Beast 2. So, like, even at that, like, they'll go and pile it up to be, like, a lot bigger. So what I'm pretty much trying to say is that with this announcement of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs becoming a live-action reboot and stuff like that, pretty much go and take this with a bit of a grain of salt. Like, highly doubt it so far, but the thing is, yeah, like, Disney says that they, or not Disney, but, like, you'll hear news sources say that, you know, that Disney is going to do this, but wait until Disney would actually say something about it. Wait until Disney would, like, Disney themselves would make a big announcement on social media and all that kind of stuff. So, are they actually going to make a Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs movie? Like, and let alone if they're also going to do that Rose Red movie at the same time. Well, honestly, that I don't know. I can't really say much. And I mean, like, one more thing I want to add about all the different announcements that they have made with all the live action reboots that Disney wants to make. Who knows if the trend that's going on will even last long? Because you never know in the future, maybe eventually, all these live action reboots, the quality might go a bit down and people are going to start taking notice, and they might end up making the same numbers as Alice Through the Looking Glass, and, or, like, not just Alice Through the Looking Glass, but also Pete's Dragon, both Alice Through the Looking Glass and Pete's Dragon, and, you know, they might even stop making these live action reboots there. So, who knows, like, which ones are actually going to be made, and even the ones that Oh My Disney has announced, like, we don't know if they're, even though they have announced it themselves, there's still a bit of that small chance that they could, they might not even happen. You know, like, maybe there isn't going to be a Dumbo directed by Tim Burton. Maybe there isn't going to be a Tinkerbell movie starring Reese Witherspoon. You know, you have to be cautious about these things. You can't just immediately jump the gun and expect them to actually be released. In fact, if you ask many filmmakers, they will tell you that things aren't official until a release date would officially be set for these films. So you never know. And plus the fact that Disney still has plenty of other movies that they got to release. I mean, it's not just their live action reboots based on their previous animated films. They still got, the animated films that they got to release, both from Walt Disney Animation Studios and Pixar, and they still have, plenty of other live-action reboots that they have to release. Some of the stuff including, The Nutcracker and the Four Realms, they still got The Jungle Cruise, and they even have A Wrinkle in Time. They still got to release those. And this is not even to mention all the movies that they got to do of Star Wars and Marvel. So they really got a lot on their plate. So just be precautious. I mean, even though the ones that Disney announced themselves, they got a higher chance to actually be made than something like Snow White. But for now, there still could be something like a 20 or even like a 40% that they might not even happen. Disney might just cancel them on the spot without really asking why. So who knows what could happen? So all this to say is that, yes, we hear the announcement that Disney might actually make a live-action reboot of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, but that still doesn't mean that it could actually happen. So be a bit precautious. And I guess this goes for the future. Anytime that you're going to hear Disney announce that, we're going to make a live action reboot of, The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad, or we announce a live action reboot of The Rescuers, Hercules, or all that kind of stuff, be cautious of it. Don't expect it to actually happen, because who knows, maybe in the future they might not even exist and they'll just be an idea and nothing more. Okay, now for our next story right here, we are going to be looking at 2017 and the surprising trend that is going on TV that apparently there's going to be a lot of animated features that are going to be jumping from the big screen to the small screen. Now, DreamWorks has already got that covered. They have already cornered that market, especially on Netflix. But other companies like Sony and especially Disney are going to be jumping into that market right now by bringing in some of their recent animated features and make a TV show out of it. Now, with Disney, they have already made the announcement of Tangled Ever After, which is going to be a 2D animated series, which further explains the adventures of Rapunzel and Flynn Rider, aka Eugene. But also, they have announced that they want to do one of Big Hero 6, which, in some ways, it could be arguable that it makes more sense to have that as an animated series, considering it focuses on superheroes, and, you can do it in the same style of, the Powerpuff Girls, or any other TV show that would feature superheroes, or actually, those are really trending right now, thinking about stuff like Green Arrow, or the Legends of Tomorrow, or even Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, you could pretty much take that and turn that into a TV show. So they are doing that, but recently, on Entertainment Weekly, they have actually announced that many of the original cast are going to be coming back to reprise their roles for the TV show. Now, again, going into my source on Entertainment Weekly, it stated, the continuation of Disney's Academy Award-winning film has recruited much of the original cast, including Scott Asdit as the cuddly robot Baymax and Ryan Potter as the young tech genius Hero. Other actors reprising their roles include Alan Tudyk as Alistar Cray, Jamie Chung as Gogo, Genesis Rodriguez as Honey Lemon, Maya Rudolph as Aunt Cass, David Sognesi as Headcliff, and of course, you got Stan Lee as Fred's dad. However, I just want to mention that not everybody is going to be coming back. Unfortunately, TJ Miller and Damon Wayans Jr. will not be reprising their roles for the animated series. Instead, they got Brooks Wheelan from Saturday Night Live will be taking on the role of Fred, and Kerry Payton of The Walking Dead will be coming in to voice Wasabi. On top of that, they have also announced that there are going to be some special guest stars that will be appearing in the series. These will include Andrew Scott of Sherlock, Andy Richard of Conan, Diedrich Bader, there we go, I got it, of American Housewife, John Ross Bowie of Speechless, Sean Giambrone of The Goldbergs, and Jennifer Lewis of Blackish. And just a little reminder that this is going to be from the creators of Kim Possible, from Mark McCorkle and Bob Shuley. And they are going to be the executive producers alongside Nick Filippi. Now, this is actually a bit admirable, I will admit, and this is going to be something that will especially cater to Big Hero 6, and you could tell that Disney will be taking care of their animated series, which are from the animated films, actually. You know, it's a little bit similar to what they did with Tangled Ever After, in which they brought back Mandy Moore and Zachary Levi to provide the voice of Rapunzel and Flynn Rider onto the animated series. They're pretty much doing the most that they can with Big Hero 6 as well. You can tell that Disney wants to give it as much care as possible to make, you know, to at least get the exact same feeling you would get from the movie and interpret that onto the TV series. And, you know, it's really nice. Like, you could tell that Disney does care about the products that they have, that, you know, they want to do their best to make it at, like, to pretty much make it as good as the movies, in a way. This is more in contrast when you look at a company like Sony, where, unlike DreamWorks and Disney, Sony doesn't have an in-house studio where they can go and make animated TV shows. Instead, they pretty much have to go and outsource it and give the project to other people like DHX and Nelvana. And who knows if they're going to give it as much respect considering that we are talking about like Hotel Transylvania and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, you might as well just put those on quote respect onto their animated films. Like, who knows? Maybe Nelvana is not going to care, or like Nelvana or DHX, they're not going to care as much about making TV shows on those properties because it doesn't belong to them. It's not like it's not their original creation. But with Disney, or even DreamWorks in a way, it is their creation. This is their thing that they've created. That's why they want to do their best to take care of it and, you know, to equally please the audience as much as they want to make it successful. Now, is it actually going to work? Is Disney going to be doing something that could be as spectacular as Big Hero 6? Who knows? But yeah, like I said before, it definitely does sound like a pretty good idea to take something like Big Hero 6 and turn that into a TV show, because with the superhero spectrum of it, Like, you could pretty much go and do whatever you want. You can make it as action-packed. There is a lot of room to create all these different villains and all these different scenarios. It all works out. Like, the movie has pretty much laid the... Like, they pretty much set the layout to the entire series, and now the people at Disney XD can pretty much go and do whatever they want with it, and I'm sure it can lead to some interesting results. And coincidentally enough, this is going to be appearing at the same time as Marvel's Spider-Man, so, like, they got a bit of a double superhero thing going on, so is it going to work? Is it not? Who knows, but it's going to be pretty interesting to see. So if you guys are interested to go and check out Big Hero 6 on the small screen in several layers of episodes, then you can pretty much wait until 2017 when the show will be released. Now, jumping on to our next story, we will be looking into a pretty interesting video essay. It's not a long one, it's just 5 minutes long, but, you know, it does give you a little bit of an admiration on animation, but specifically on one certain director that is pretty much a huge name in animation, and that is Brad Bird. Now, if you're listening to this, you know very well who Brad Bird is. This is the guy who directed some of the greatest animated features in recent years, including The Iron Giant, The Incredibles, and Ratatouille. However, there's this one editor named Kees van Dijkhuizen. Okay, I'm going to say that. His name is Kees van Dijkhuizen Jr. He is an editor, and he decided to take a bunch of commentary clips from several different places and decided to put them all together to create a little video essay regarding Brad Bird's view on animated films and what is it that takes, not only what is it that takes, but pretty much what makes a great animated film? What's the difference between a good animated film, a recent animated film that people are doing nowadays, and a great animated film? Something that is in the levels of The Iron Giant or The Incredibles or Ratatouille. Like, what makes those movies stand out more than many other animated films? Well, the one thing, it does go down into different aspects, is that, for one, is subtlety. And even now, this actually gives us a really good example of how it's almost sad in a way that most animated features recently are losing the importance of subtlety. The times when, you can just calmly build up into something and just sit back and let the characters just see something admirable. And, you know, like, you actually do see a lot of these moments in many of Brad Bird's films. Like, the best example I could think of in this case is in Ratatouille, when Remy has to crawl around the sewers, and then suddenly he takes a break, takes a moment to just relax and look around Paris, I think for the first time. But, yeah, you know, just that kind of idea. But then you would look into what's actually interesting about that, like the importance of subtlety, is that in this essay, they actually give us an example how, like I said before, many animated films are pretty much losing that to the point that they would just do whatever they want. They don't care about subtlety and they would just go crazy with it. And even in here, you actually see a lot of trailers for many upcoming animated films. Like, the biggest targets are mostly the ones that are trying to be a lot more cartoony. Not just the really recent ones, but the upcoming ones as well. Like, you see clips of just Boss Baby, the Angry Birds movie, Storks, Cars 2, ironically enough, Smurfs The Lost Village, and you see all that kind of stuff. Like, where they put in the important, like, they just don't care about subtlety, and they just want to be as over the top as possible, thinking that's how you get the audience's attention. And, you know, it's really sad because, like, even with movies like the recent Ice Age films or Hotel Transylvania, They don't care about subtlety. They just want to be as outlandishly over the top as possible, thinking that's how you get the audience's attention. It's like they don't care not just about subtlety, but good writing as well. And they just, you know, be as over the top. And that's one of the biggest reasons why no one cares about these movies. That's why it's very rare that you would find anybody who would call them legitimately good animated features, and why pretty much their reputation nowadays are pretty much found just in the $5 bins at Walmart. And it kind of shows their value right there. They're just cheap, goofy, over-the-top animated films that just don't care about subtlety. And that's why nobody cares about these movies. That's why nobody says... No, that's why it's very rare you would find anybody say that they're good animated films. And that's one thing that Brad Bird knows about, is subtlety. And another big aspect is regarding consequences. And considering that, almost all animated features are pretty much G-rated or PG-rated, so the consequences that could happen, they're very minimal when you do think about it. It's not really like anybody dies or anything like that. Like, sometimes they try to do it, but most of the time they try to pass off the cheap cliche of, oh, is he dead? Let's put on our sad face. Oh, he's not dead. Let's be happy again. Like, everybody does that stupid thing, and they think it's effective, but no, it's just like, it's a cheap old cliche, and it lessens your it makes your value a little bit less into your animated feature. But with Brad Bird, when he mentions about consequences, like, you can actually see at many times when you would find many characters that are in major peril, that you can tell that there are consequences. You can tell when a character is either critically injured or they can be flat out dead. Like, and sometimes they can result into different aspects. Like, one example in The Incredibles, like, you would see a lot of danger. You would see a lot of people in pain. But one great example, like, at least in a comical sense, is when Bob would get so fed up with his boss that it was at the point where, like, he could have stopped a robbery where, like, this guy, like, a thief is pretty much stealing this woman's purse or something like that. And his boss actually stopped him from pursuing to save the day and all that kind of stuff. And at that point, he was just so pissed off that he just literally threw him through so many walls, leaving the boss critically injured and, like, staying in the hospital almost completely bandaged except for his face. Now, in a dramatic sense, for consequences, that would actually be found in The Iron Giant, and the best example for that would have to be in the deer scene, when the giant would meet this deer, and, you know, he is curious about it because, like, he's meeting different life other than humans for the first time, and then suddenly, like, the deer runs off, but then, the next time we see him, he's dead. Like, that was pretty much the time when the giant learns about mortality, when people would die, when not everybody would live forever, you know? Sometimes people have to just go. It's one of the most empowering and one of the most heartbreaking scenes in The Iron Giant. Because, like, for him, for the giant, it's almost like a traumatic moment. And that's where you learn about major consequences. And it really does establish that this is a world where there is mortality, where people might actually die. And that's why it's really important to have those consequences, to really push that level, to really injure these people, to show that there is pain, to show that there is actually death in that movie. And that's very rare to find nowadays, you know? It's not every day that you would find a character that would end up being legitimately dead. That's why I would highly admire movies like How to Train Your Dragon 2 or even The Princess and the Frog, where they would actually take that extra step, you know? And yeah, that, you know, it really does give you, like, honestly, I highly recommend that you go and check out this, the like honestly, yeah, definitely go and check out this this video essay. You can find it on Vimeo. It's a highly interesting essay. Really such a great work on it. And on top of that, it even ends off with Brad Bird explaining how you know the old saying of how animation is a medium, and on top of that, how it's not like when people understand the craft, then they know how to make something powerful, something emotional. When people understand the true use of animation, you can come out with something that's amazing, something in the levels of what Disney is doing right now, or even Pixar is doing right now. You know, that's the power of animation. And that, like, Brad Bird is one of those few people that really do understand that. And even though there are many animated films nowadays, they can end up turning like crap made by dumb people who just don't know how to animation or don't know how to animation properly. But there are those rare gems that do come out just absolutely beautiful. Rather they be something like Zootopia, Kubo and the Two Strings, or even Finding Dory. You know, they come out legendary. They come out phenomenal. They come out being highly remembered by the public. And, you know, like, overall, I would definitely say, after you listen to this podcast, give this a shot, because it really is worth a watch. Now, for our next story, we are going to be looking into Tim Miller, the recently acclaimed director of the movie Deadpool. Now, as you may have heard, unfortunately, there have been a lot of trouble that's been brewing on with the sequel, Deadpool 2. Unfortunately, he has parted ways from the project due to massive creative differences. He couldn't handle it anymore, and he wants to move on. And with that said, there have been like a chain of events that isn't going on so well during production, including the composer quitting the project as well. So at this rate, the fate of Deadpool 2, we don't know what's going to be going on, but some of you might be wondering, what is Tim Miller going to be doing now? Well, I'm not too worried about him, because he has found another project that he wants to do with a close friend of his. And that would actually be, believe it or not, with Sonic the Hedgehog. Yep, Sonic the Hedgehog is going to be turning into a movie. The thing is that Sony Pictures actually wants to make a live-action animation hybrid of Sonic the Hedgehog. No, not from Sony Pictures Animation, believe it or not, but actually from... it's actually a collaboration, much like with what they're doing with Peter Rabbit, where they're assigning an outside source animation studio to work on it, which in there it's actually Animal Logic. In here, they actually assigned it, I'll find it, here we go. It is a collaboration with Sony Pictures and Marza Animation Planet, which apparently it's a production company owned by Sega. So that's good. At least we know that Sega will be attached to it. But going into Tim Miller, some of you might be wondering, oh, with this news, is Tim Miller going to be... Is he going to be a director of the Sonic the Hedgehog movie? Well, no. He's just going to be the executive producer. Who will be directing it will be his partner from Blur Studios, Jeff Fowler. This is going to be his first feature directorial debut. Now, they have experienced... they actually did make an animated short back in 2005 called Gopher Broke, where it's the same thing. Tim Miller was an executive producer and Fowler was the director, on top of being a writer. And at one point, they were both of them were working with Dave Fincher when they were doing the animated project of The Goon, which we still don't know what's going on with it, but. Who knows at this point? So going into Sonic the Hedgehog, you know, it's actually like, honestly, I don't know how they're going to bring Sonic the Hedgehog onto live action, because technically a lot of people would say that this is not the first time that it happened. There is that fan-made movie that happened before. I remember seeing it, and yeah, technically it's not the best looking one. It's not something that has like the highest budget out there, especially with Sonic looking Pretty weird, I must say. It's the one that apparently has a lot of cameos from different internet celebrities. Like, Brentel Floss was there, James Rolfe, the angry video game nerd, Stuttering Craig of Screw Attack. Even Doug Walker was just, like, I remember, like, the first time that we see Sonic the Hedgehog, we also see Doug Walker as this policeman, just, like, just weirded out. It's like, what the heck am I watching? Okay, but yeah, going into this, seeing that there is going to be a legitimate Sonic the Hedgehog movie, it is going to be interesting, but I think, honestly, like, I can joke around about Sony Pictures and whatever, but honestly, I think it could be in good hands, actually. You know, we got Tim Miller working on it. He has already proved himself to be this acclaimed director because of Deadpool. And what's actually very interesting is that Tim Miller has a very strong background in animation. Beforehand, he was working on different animated projects, including some video game projects even. So he should probably feel right at home working on something like Sonic the Hedgehog, and I'm pretty sure he would be very familiar with Sonic. And the fact that he has this is a longtime collaborator with Jeff Fowler, you know, they might actually have some good chemistry, and it might result into something that's actually pretty good with Sonic the Hedgehog. Now, the big question still remains is, what kind of story are they going to develop with this movie? Are they going to do something that is similar to some of the recent games where Sonic is like in this mix of a live action world in a way, and he would suddenly be like battling either Chaos Zero or has to go to space with many of the other characters like Shadow? Like, is it going to be more in the levels of Sonic Adventures, or are we going more into classic Sonic where we see, like, you know, the little Green Hill Zone world where he has to go and stop Dr. Robotnik or Dr. Eggman or however the frig you want to call him? Who knows? But it does seem like an interesting combination. Like, so far, it does show a little bit of promise to the project, and it might turn out to be interesting. The big question, however, I think, like, the biggest factor is what Sonic is going to look like. Because the thing is, now he is entering upon, like, he's entering a live-action animation hybrid, so they might have to make him look pretty realistic. Are they going to stay true to the design, or are they going to give him, like, a weird new look? That I don't know. That is going to be the big factor, because the thing is, Sonic looks anything but realistic, especially with the way that they drew his eyes, that it looks like this one big eye, like this one giant eyeball with two pupils on it. Who knows what they're going to do? That's going to play a big factor. If they can make it look good, if the public will accept it, then maybe it might turn out to be something that could be great. Who knows? But yeah, so far there is no release date to the film just yet. We don't know when the film will be released. Sony Pictures did not put in a release date for it, but, you know, I might be interested in this. So far, it looks like it could be heading into the right direction. And so now we got Matt's pick of the week. And for this week, I decided I wanted to go back into my childhood, looking back at some of the favorite animated shows that I like to watch. Now, a lot of people would be either Team Nickelodeon or Team Cartoon Network and stuff like that, and although I have watched a lot of Nicktoons back in my kid days, you know, stuff like Rugrats or SpongeBob and some Fairly Odd Parents and all that kind of stuff, I would watch those, but I would consider myself more of a major Cartoon Network fan. Like, those are the ones that I remember the most and the ones that I would really get excited. And, like, when I think about, like, my favorite animated series from there, like, I initially remember them more than most other TV shows I watched as a kid. Like, Ed, Edd n Eddy would always be my number one favorite Cartoon Network show. Kids Next Door, Dexter's Lab, Samurai Jack. I remember watching some of the Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. Courage the Cowardly Dog, that's a good one. Did I say Johnny Bravo? Not yet. The Powerpuff Girls, and all those shows. But One of them that I would say that is almost up there that would be one of my favorites with Ed, Edd, and Eddie would have to be Cow and Chicken with a little bit of a mix with I Am Weasel. Oh my god, it's one of those dumb shows, but it's just absolutely hilarious. The style, like, in a way, for some reason as a kid, I remember this more, I remember watching this more than I would watching Ren and Stimpy. So, in a sense, I would say as a kid, this would be my Ren and Stimpy, considering it has that weird artistic style that is more abstract. It's more over the top. It's made to be more oddly comical in a way. So I am definitely a fan of like Cow and Chicken. The red guy is awesome, hands down. And also Super Cow, Arrest Captain. Oh man, that show was awesome. But anyways, going into my point, what is Matt's Pick of the Week? Well, recently, Cartoon Brew has done an interview with the creator of Cow and Chicken, with David Fice, mostly looking into what is his, pretty much his animation career, what he has been doing, and it pretty much chronicles almost all of the things that he has done. So, looking into the origins of Cow and Chicken, the art style that it interpreted, looking into, what was the show, Yoo-Hoo and Friends, that he, that unfortunately didn't get like public around the world and only in a few places, and also his career at Sony, mostly doing the work on Open Season. Now, like, if we look a little bit deep into it, which by the way I highly recommend to go and check this this article is actually really interesting. So pretty much you guys have two homeworks after listening to this podcast, where first off, you got to check out the Brad Bird video essay, and then you got to check out the David Fice interview on Cartoon Brew. So it actually starts out a bit with the origins of Cow and Chicken, how it came to be, like, where he started out with Hanna-Barbera, and somehow this story that he has that he created for his daughter turned out to be something that they wanted to do for a brand new channel called Cartoon Network. So they decided to go and pick that. And eventually it went and grew from there, where he had to go and create more characters, including the red guy, I Am Weasel, and IR Baboon. So we pretty much see a bit of that evolution into there. And it even mentioned a little bit of comparisons with John Crisfalusi's Ren and Stimpy. And he does emphasize that there is a really distinct style between John Kay and David Fice. And anybody who has watched both shows, like, even though they might seem similar, the style of humor is absolutely different. Like, there is a clear difference between John Kay and David Fice. But then afterwards, it would go a little bit into Yoo-Hoo and Friends, where it would discuss about the making of that show and how he ended up getting Flava Flav onto the series, and discussing how, unfortunately, due to copyright, it was very limited. It wasn't shown around the world. It was only shown in places like Australia, the UK, and in Latin America. So it didn't really end up doing as well, and he had a bit of difficulties because technically this is a show that was made for children. It was meant to be educational. But even on the article on Cartoon Brew, they did show a little bit of a clip of it. And you actually do see a little bit of that humor from David Fice, and especially the art style. It's very Cow and Chicken-like. And you actually hear a bit of the acting chops of Flava Flav playing as Father Time, which is a little bit like the host of this series, which, honestly, I don't mean to offend anyone, but I'll be honest, yeah. Flava Flav is not much of an actor, to be honest. Like, boy. But then afterwards, after he talked about all that with Cow and Chicken and Yoo-Hoo and Friends, we would then transcend into his career at Sony, where he would be working on the head of story on Open Season. And one of the major highlights that they would be talking about is the running gag throughout the entire movies that they would use rabbits for whatever they want. Apparently, like, one of the big things is that there is this, there's a joke in the first movie that pretty much initially started it, where, it was Elliot. Like, I was trying to think of the names. I was like, which one is the deer again? Oh, yeah, okay, it's Elliot. So, apparently, like, Elliot wants to get Boog's attention with the, the classic way where he's in a house, he's sleeping, and he tries to throw rocks onto the window. But what David Feist decided to do is he decided to put in a little spin, and instead of throwing rocks, he would just throw in rabbits. And that's why it became a tradition to use rabbits as whatever they wished to do. And finally, they would, and also he would mention a bit about when he would work on the newest Open Season film, Scared Silly. And in that one, he talked about, like, some of the challenges that he had to do with working with an immensely small budget. Because keep in mind, Open Season was just straight to DVD, and it only gathered a budget of just $5.5 million, which compared to some of the other budgets that Sony would put in to some of their other films, like The Smurfs or Hotel Transylvania, putting in like $70, $80, or even $100 million onto it. And that's just for the movie itself. Like, this is not even to mention the marketing. What they did with Open Season Scared Silly, like, he does mention a lot of the things that, like, he does pull back into doing to keep the budget small. Like, there isn't a lot of moving cameras, and they use the minimal amount of water onto the picture to make it look as good as they can, at the very least. And finally, to conclude, Dave would also talk about what he's pretty much doing right now. And currently, if I may take a quote here from Cartoon Brew, David Feist said, "I'm developing an original idea of mine. These are always long shots, but that's what I'm doing right now at Sony. Hopefully it will have the sensibilities of family films, but with a little bit of a twist." So basically, you do get a little bit of an education about a kind of a summary about the life and the animation career of David Feist going from Cow and Chicken to Open Season. Although I must say that at the end, when he mentioned that he's trying to develop this original idea at Sony, the only thing I must say to David is just, dude, I love your work. Always been a fan ever since as a kid. I adore Cow and Chicken, but dude, get out while you still can. Leave Sony ASAP. Seriously, at this rate, Sony is just a godforsaken sinking ship, and whatever original idea you have, I highly doubt that they're making it. I mean, even Genndy Tartakovsky is having such a hard time trying to develop his original idea, and now he's stuck ball and chain to go and work on nothing but the Hotel Transylvania films, and literally that's it. And even he's not learning his lesson to try to get out of it. He's starting to go Stockholm Syndrome with the projects. So pretty much at this rate, and especially with the fact that Sony is making movies like the Emoji Movie, you never know if in the future there is going to be you don't even know if there is a future for Sony Pictures Animation. So just get out while you still can. Try to find another job elsewhere, whether it be on Cartoon Network or wherever. Like, you just got, like, just find a way to just get out of it. If you're going to stay at Sony, you're going to get nothing. The most that I can imagine in your future while staying at Sony, you're going to work on the fifth Open Season film. Just get out. Just leave while you still can. Just get out of it. Just get out of there. Find a project elsewhere. Go and start a Kickstarter if you have to, if you have an original idea. Just leave somewhere. Just save yourself, Dave. Save yourself. Ian Fales, I must say, he did a really good job interviewing David Feist here. Really fascinating article. And like I said, do your homework, kids, and go and check out the Brad Bird video essay, and also check out the interview with David Feiss. It's really good. But anyways, that is all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can also find more of my work on film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. And if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be wonderful. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news, not the reviews, this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!